This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
So, like, as a power move, he would stand sideways at urinals so that, like, people would be able to see it.
From the creators of 13, a podcast about books.
Not even piss king, just talked about piss all the time.
And speaking of porn,
prayer house,
wolf house.
Mostly about books.
Bridget and I are going to bring the scares, and Brooke's going to bring the smut.
Search for Edging wherever you listen to podcasts, or go to edgingthepodcast.com. Hey there. Thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. Before we get started, as always, we want to thank our new patrons. Call Mwabedi, Alyssa, Keisha Ray, Siley Rad, We're Papa Foon, and Karen Watson. Thank you so much for your support, and welcome to the Pod Fam. You may have noticed that a few of our episodes have mid-roll ad spots, including this one. We try our best to avoid breaking the tension of our stories, but ads are part of how we keep the lights on. We've carefully placed these breaks so that they won't interrupt a scene or cut right into the action. And if you don't want to hear any ads, then check us out over on Patreon. For as little as $1 a month, you'll have access to ad-free episodes. Now, without further ado, today's story is The Well, Part 1, written by M.N. Wiggins. Part 2 will be out next Monday, and normally we would already have Part 2 up for our patrons, but due to some production delays, we're still working on Part 2. But it will be posted to Patreon as soon as it's ready. Otherwise, we'll see you next week. Are you ready? Sit back, turn down the lights, and now, on with the show. When I was a young girl, I used to sit for hours reading on the big front porch of our farmhouse. One day, on a warm June afternoon, I looked up from my book, pinched my nose, and asked my grandmother,
"Why do we have to raise chickens? Sarah Flanders' family doesn't raise chickens."
My grandmother loved to rock in her chair on that porch, and I loved listening to those wood panels creak as she moved to and fro.
"You don't worry about Sarah Flanders or her family," she said. "We raise chickens because that's what we do. Would you rather it be pigs?"
I winced. My grandmother's hobbies consisted of exactly 3 things: rocking, sipping iced tea, and killing. Her steely eyes would lock onto a target as her rocking chair crept to a halt. She'd set down her sweet tea with the stealth of a ninja. Her right hand would cock at the wrist, wielding her weapon of choice: a frayed green plastic fly swatter with a white wire handle. An instrument that had sent innumerable flies to the great beyond. She'd watch and wait with the patience of a sphinx, ready to bring death from above to any winged creature that dared enter the no-fly zone that was the radius of her reach. The fly buzzed away, as if mocking her.
I'll get you sooner or later, Marty, she said. Come on back if you've got the guts. I peeked up from behind my book, and I asked her, do you have to name the flies? She flicked the dearly departed off the small end table next to her rocker. Everyone deserves a little dignity in their final hour, she said, as her eyes stalked her next victim. Hello, Maurice. Come to Mama. I rolled my eyes, as I often did. Grandma, will you tell me about my mother? She smiled and took a sip of tea. Oh, she was a firecracker. Most times you couldn't tell her anything, and she was always sticking her nose where it didn't belong. But I'll tell you this, she wasn't afraid of anything. I looked down. Why'd she have to die the day I was born? Grandma looked away. It just happens that way sometimes. Why are you asking, Clarissa? I shrugged, and I stuck my nose back in my book. Mr. Johnson, my science teacher, he says that when people look away when they're answering a question, it means they're not telling the whole story. Grandma narrowed her eyes. Oh, Mr. Johnson says that, does he? Let me tell you a little something about Carl Johnson. I remember when he was a little boy. Used to jump up and down in mud puddles until he was covered head to toe. Laughing and carrying on, happy as a lark. Watched his mama tan his hide several times right out there in the street. But you could bet, come next rain, he'd be right back at it. You think about that next time he goes to revealing secrets of the universe to you. I blinked a few times. Well, I think he's quite intelligent. Intelligent? Honey, that man's a ring-tailed idiot. Strutting around a town of farmers, spouting off big words like he's better than everybody else just because he went to some fancy community college. Everybody knows he went on his mama's settlement money after she got hit by that tractor trailer. Another question arose from behind my paperback. Grandma, why do you go all the way out into the woods to feed the birds? She sighed. Clarissa, now why do you want to know that? Oh, got you, Maurice. She peered through her bifocals at four legs sticking up in the air. Wait, was that you, Carlos? She muttered, as she nudged his remains off the porch railing. Guess that's a case of wrong place, wrong time. I piped up again, unwilling to let the subject drop. Because I've never been allowed out in the woods. You said it was dangerous. She laughed. Dangerous? I'll tell you what's dangerous. Driving out on these roads. All these northern folk moving down here, buying up land, building condominiums and such. Suddenly, city folk want to live out in the middle of nowhere. I'll tell you what, this old town ain't what it used to be. She pointed her swatter threateningly at the fleeing fly. Oh, laugh if you want to, Maurice, but your butt is mine. I put my book down. For as long as I can remember, you've forbidden me from playing in those woods. You said Clyde would get me if I did. Is he a space alien? She winced and stopped rocking. A what? I shrugged. Like an alien from another planet. Grandma rolled her eyes. Girl, I know what a space alien is. What I don't know is what's putting that nonsense in your head. What are you reading? I held up my new favorite book. Magical Arkansas Tales. It's about a girl named Charlie, she's about my age, and comes across a whole space alien invasion right out in the woods. And no one believes her because she's a girl. Typical. My grandmother nodded. Uh-huh. And how old are you now? Ooh, you got lucky there, Ricky. But you get near my tea again, and I'm going to introduce you to Jesus. I'm 13, I said. She sighed. Well, that's old enough to quit believing in ghost stories about old Clyde. I pushed my glasses higher up on my nose. Point of fact, I haven't believed in ghosts since the fifth grade. Thus, if Clyde exists at all in the woods, I suspect he is of alien origin. Mr. Johnson says life on other planets is a statistically valid assumption. She rocked a little more and nodded. Uh-huh. Your mama liked to show off with big words, too. Till the day another girl gave her a butt-whooping over it. She shook a finger. Wise up, honey. Learn from your mama's mistakes. I narrowed my eyes. So if Clyde's not a ghost or an alien, why keep me out of those woods all these years? She shrugged. Didn't want you anywhere near that old well. What well? She sighed. I guess 13's old enough. I wasn't much older when my mama told me. And since your mama's gone to the Lord, and my time can't be far, I suppose you ought to know. My eyebrows shot up. Know what? About our family, Grandma said. About where I go on my walks, why I take bread, and who I talk to. You talk to someone out there? I asked excitedly. Her wrinkles pulled up with another smile. I talked to Clyde. Have you been taking your medications the way Dr. Davis prescribed? I asked. She ignored me, clasped her hands over her belly, and began to rock again. A long time before you were born, I rolled my eyes and went back to my book. Grandma continued. Clyde was a little boy growing up in this house, the oldest of several children, the youngest of which was Mama Esther, my grandmother. I looked back up, interested. Clyde was real? She nodded. Very real. Now, he was a sickly child and never got to run around like the others. Like me? I asked. Yes, child. If going to the doctor were a sport, your picture would have been on a box of cereal. Yeah, but I got better, I said, turning a page, hoping to find out if Charlie's plan to take on the aliens would work. Grandma rocked as she nodded. So you did. And so did Clyde as he grew. And around the time he was a little older than you, something strange happened. This got my attention. Strange how? Well, changes mostly, the sort we all go through. Body starts changing, attitude starts growing. Things you don't care about suddenly become real interesting. But for Clyde, there was something extra. He took a shine to a girl named Eula Bentley. The same Bentleys that still live past the Flanders on the far side of the creek. She pointed across the creek, and her eyes narrowed. Are any of those Bentley kids in your class? I shook my head. Good, she said. Ain't none of them worth the price of a stamp. And to hear Mama Esther tell it, Eula's daddy was the worst. All started back during the worst drought this country's ever seen. Crops suffered, the rats were bad. It was blazing hot, and people were on pins and needles waiting for the rain. The well beside our house dried up. Mama Esther and the other kids had to hoof it all the way over to Myers Creek with buckets every day. Clyde's daddy, James, my great-granddaddy, hired Mr. Bentley to dig a new well. Mr. Bentley came over and strutted with his divining rod, settling on a place where the soil wasn't quite so hard to dig. James didn't like the location because it was too far from the house, but Mr. Bentley said it was the only place with water,
staked his reputation on it. Promised he'd give back every penny if he didn't strike water. Well, he dug and dug, laying stone as he went. And when he didn't hit water, he dug some more. About as deep as a man can without it becoming his tomb. But it was dry as a bone. Old Mr. Bentley climbed out of that well and took off, taking James's money with him. The next morning, James found Mr. Bentley face down outside the gathering place, where men went after dark to drink, gamble, and whatever else they did there. James got him up and demanded he get to digging another well or give the money back. And Mr. Bentley said that wasn't happening on account of he'd gambled away the money and the job was done anyway. Well, the two men took to fighting. And James gave old Bentley a whooping most men would never forget. Right there in front of the rest of the town. But he never saw a dime or a drop of water out of that well. And there's been bad blood ever since. From behind my book, I sighed dramatically, as only a 13-year-old could.
I thought this was a story about Clyde, the invisible alien ghost you see when you're off your meds.
Grandma stopped rocking and smiled.
May I see your book, please?
I watched in horror as my grandmother slung Magical Arkansas Tales off the porch and into the unknown depths of the hedges.
You want to hear a story about your family, or you want to keep reading trash?
I looked off the porch, along the trajectory of her throwing arm. Submarined in the depths of the prickly holly bushes sat the answer to whether Cranston Porter, Charlie's best friend, would make it out of the alien ship alive or be eaten. Now I might never know. I sighed.
Fine. What happened next? Oh, you'd like to know?
She asked as she rocked triumphantly.
Now that you've got nothing better to do, you're interested. Do I understand that correctly, young lady?
Yes, ma'am. She said. Her eyes narrowed as she sipped her tea and resumed rocking. Well, the dealings between James and Mr. Bentley didn't deter Clyde's feelings for Eula Bentley one bit. Might have made her all the more alluring. No telling how a teenage boy's mind works. Didn't matter, though. Eula wouldn't have given Clyde a glass of water if his head was on fire. When Eula's daddy caught wind of how Clyde was looking at her, he made it clear that if those looks didn't stop, Clyde wouldn't live to see another birthday. And naturally, that drove up Clyde's stock in Eula's eyes. And they started sneaking about, taking walks out in the woods. I raised my hand.
What's wrong with a walk in the woods?
Because, child, the wildlife they were interested in were the birds and the bees. Grandma looked at me, like that was supposed to settle things. I shrugged.
I still don't get it.
Grandma sighed.
Remember that talk we had last year?
I made a face.
Ew. Good, she said, pointing at me. You just keep on feeling that way.
Well, one day, Clyde and Eula came across an injured dog in the woods. Someone had kicked it nearly to death. Eula thought it might have been a mule, but Clyde figured it was mean old Mr. Bentley coming off a drink. Clyde bent down to pet the old dog to comfort it. And that's when it happened. My eyes widened. What? Grandma jutted out her lower lip and shrugged.
Sure you want to know? You wouldn't rather fetch a rake and go rooting around in those thorn bushes for your spaceman book?
I shook my head. She smiled. That dying dog got up and trotted off, happy as a pup, like it had never been hurt at all. Like it was just pretending? I asked. That's what Clyde thought. But not Eula. she knew she'd seen a miracle. And the only thing better than a miracle was being the first to gossip about it. Old Eula hightailed it out of those woods before Clyde knew which way was up. She told anyone who'd listen that Clyde had the touch. Now, of course, at the time, nobody believed her. Just a silly girl gossiping for attention. But the next day, Clyde was delivering groceries to the Flanders house. Sarah Flanders' house? Yes, child. Flanders have been here for generations, just like the Bentleys and us and all the others. That's why it's a crying shame all these rich carpetbaggers are coming down here. I snapped my fingers. Grandma, Clyde, remember? Right. The very next day, he was handing old Miss Flanders her groceries when he bumped her wart. A big one. Right about here. She pointed at the back of her hand. Day after that, her butt was all over the ladies' auxiliary, showing those old windbags where her wart had disappeared. Not only that, but her whole hand and part of her forearm were now smooth. Not a wrinkle on it. Quite a bit different from the rest of her real estate. And she claimed to feel 10 years younger. As you can imagine, telling folks you've discovered the Fountain of Youth doesn't take a whole lot of convincing. And you'd best believe, once the word got out, people lost all sense. It all started in church that Sunday. Clyde was singing in the choir beside Miss Cleveland, and right in the middle of Amazing Grace, she grabbed his hand and planted it square on her hip in front of the entire congregation. Cured her arthritis on the spot. After that, it was no holds barred. Mr. Russell snuck up and bumped Clyde backwards, ridding his 3 years of back pain. Miss Esther, who suffered from migraines, climbed on a pew and headbutted him. Mr. Roper stole his comb, hoping he'd grow back his hair. And Miss Carrie, who was rumored to drink and popularize with the menfolk down at the gathering place, well, she suffered from something a little further south. How Clyde cured her, he never said. And they didn't stop coming. They lined up in front of this very porch, day and night, demanding Clyde come out and commence to laying on of hands. He cured heart problems, pneumonia, earaches, cancer, smoker's cough, the shakes from coming off liquor, and so on. Even those without affliction came to watch, because each touch made a sparkling orange glow. Folks couldn't get enough. The porch floor was getting hard underneath me, but the story was just getting good. I tucked my feet under my knees. How long ago was all this? Grandma looked up at the ceiling fan. Let's see. Mama Esther was a little girl then, and she had my mama, and then I came along. Then after that 4th of July party, we learned your mama was on the way. I'd say around 90 or 95 years ago. Let's say 100 on average. I raised a finger. Mr. Johnson says that only average people use averages. He says we should always use available data for precise calculation. Granny's left eye twitched as she pointed with her swatter. Girl, flies aren't the only thing I can send to meet Jesus. Yes, ma'am, I replied quickly. Now, once he'd cured the major illnesses in the county, Clyde figured. My hand shot up again. What? If Clyde was your Mama Esther's brother, would that make him your great uncle? She stopped rocking and leaned forward. Clarissa, can I finish the dang story? Yes, ma'am. So, my great-uncle Clyde figured they'd leave him alone. But they kept right on lining up. Only this time, it was for wrinkles, pot bellies, needing glasses, unsightly moles, and the sort. Didn't matter what hour it was, whether Clyde had slept or had his supper. Now, you should understand, Clyde suffered tremendous pain with each touch. Every healing ripped a little life from him. Not 3 weeks after it started, he looked older, weaker, and sickly again.
Did they stop coming around then, when they saw?
They did not. Whatever harm it was doing, the townspeople turned a blind eye. But Clyde's mama, Corinne, she saw it, and so did James. And on one cloudless, sweltering night, when the flies were bad and the whole town smelled of diseased and dying hogs, they decided to put a stop to it. They sent Clyde back inside to supper, and they told everyone to go home. Told him how much it was hurting him. Told him he might die if it kept on. But the crowd would have none of it. You can't tell folks their golden goose is done laying eggs. Miss Anderson, who was third in line and suffered from the vapors, agreed that Clyde looked tired. If they'd bring him out for just 3 more healings, everyone would leave for the night. Well, that was all fine and dandy for the 3 at the front. But Mr. Gilchrist, who was 5th, bawled that it wasn't fair. Said he'd been in line for hours and wasn't going home until Clyde fixed his knee. Said if he wasn't healed and back to work, his family would starve that winter. Then he accused Clyde of being selfish and uncaring. The folks behind him agreed. Miss Better, a widow woman in line because her smoking had taken her ability to outsing Miss Abernathy in the church choir, shouted that Clyde was holding out for money, an abomination of the gift God had given. And another demanded to know why Clyde refused to make it rain. As people started sweating in that line, calling him terrible names, someone asked why Clyde got to decide who suffered and who didn't. Another yelled there ought to be a committee. The mayor, a lover of steak and sufferer of gout, and last in line because no one would let him cut, told everybody to calm down, promising a new line based upon need, as determined by a committee he would chair. He called for a volunteer to go back into town for the sheriff to keep order. And no one did, for fear of losing their own place in line. The people in the back shouted a new line was a grand idea, while those in front yelled something about over their dead bodies. And in the blink of an eye, a free-for-all broke out with good Christian folk shoving, punching, pulling hair, throwing elbows, and all the while being verbally assaulted by an assortment of profanities by members of the ladies' auxiliary. She pointed off the porch. And all that happened right there.
And Clyde was inside the house with the other children, with Mama Esther.
Granny nodded. Mama Esther told me she stood right there at that window, saw the whole thing. But the one person she didn't see was Mr. Bentley. He'd found out about Clyde and Eula and was biding his time. With everyone fighting out front, he slipped through the back door and gave Clyde a beating while the other children screamed. James and Corinne never heard it. Then Bentley dragged Clyde out onto the porch and shouted to the crowd that God had spoken. Told him that Clyde was the devil's minion, and if they wanted this drought to end, they'd best listen. Corinne tended to Clyde while James went after Mr. Bentley. But the crowd held him back, wanting to hear his revelation. Mama Esther said Bentley most likely had ruminated on revenge for some time, because that night he had a silver tongue. He took off his hat, wiped his bald head with his handkerchief, and looked over at the crowd with sorrowful eyes. Said he didn't want to say more. Claimed it was too painful. The things this monster had done to his daughter. The crowd demanded he go on, and he waved them off. When they raised a ruckus, sly old Bentley relented. With his hat in his hand, he explained how Eula had stumbled upon Clyde praying to the devil out in the woods. Clyde had forced her to watch him sacrifice a dog in return for his gift, that was actually a curse, had revealed to her that the devil had given him the power to fool people and prevent rain. Said Clyde had threatened to kill her entire family if she didn't go into town and proclaim him a healer. What choice did she have? My eyes were as wide as they could go.
But Eula was in love with Clyde. Was she there?
You bet she was. Climbed onto this porch beside her daddy and looked at her beloved Clyde's bruised and swollen eyes. She saw his bloody and torn lips, the same ones she'd kissed 1,000 times in those woods. She turned to the crowd, held her hand up to heaven, and proclaimed that her daddy spoke the honest truth. Said she'd swear to it on a stack of Bibles as tall as the walls of Jericho. Crowd got restless then. James shouted Clyde couldn't be Satan's servant after helping so many. Mr. Bentley held up both hands and said God had revealed the healings were a fraud. Everyone's afflictions would return and be worse by threefold. Clyde was a wolf in sheep's clothing, spreading demonic influence over the county, and there would be hell to pay. Bentley pointed to the crowd and told them to see what old Scratch's servant had already done. Good, honest Christian people fighting like dogs. He asked if that'd be happening without Clyde. No one could deny it. Corinne and James pleaded, but Bentley had them silenced. Then he lifted Clyde off the porch floor and invited him to say otherwise, if he dared before God and these good people. But Clyde was so weak from the healings and the beating, he couldn't speak. Having made his case, Bentley let go, and Clyde hit the porch with a thud. Then, as Bentley swatted at flies, he pointed at the crowd and prophesied the worst was yet to come. Any child born of a woman accepting Clyde's touch would be possessed, and any touched woman beyond childbearing age would die before next spring. And all those who'd lined up that evening seeking the satanic gift were now beholden to the devil, written not in blood, but in sparkling orange. Going to heaven was out of the question. Unless... I gasped. Unless what, Grandma? The mob demanded to know the same thing. And Mr. Bentley smiled. He said God had shown him the answer, his blessed reward for not being fooled by Clyde and the devil. Just as Jesus had cast out demons, the good Lord instructed they do the same. Just as God had instructed Noah to build an ark, he had instructed Mr. Bentley to dig a well on this very farm. The Lord had made sure there'd be no water in this well, allowing Mr. Bentley to dig as deep as any well had ever been dug. In fact, the bottom was about halfway to hell, which was where this imp that called itself Clyde needed to go. The good townspeople descended upon Clyde, beating him with sticks and rocks and tearing at his clothes. Corinne and James fought, but it did no good. And while people beat on Clyde, they'd touch him with whatever body part they wanted healed. After a while, Clyde's sparkling orange glow stopped, infuriating the mob further. They lifted his limp body and followed Bentley in a funeral procession down to the well. Mama Esther heard cheers as they tossed her dead brother down the well. Mr. Bentley led the crowd back to the house and turned his finger to James and Corinne. It had been revealed to him that they'd made a pact with the devil to spawn Clyde. Heaven refused to release any rains as long as they and their evil litter walked the earth. With the drought, heat, and pressure of dying crops and livestock. Getting whipped into a frenzy and killing a teenager was one thing, but killing little children was where the townsfolk drew the line. But crafty Bentley was on fire, pointing at the house and inviting doubting Thomases to go see for themselves. A few did, coming out, shouting about a chalk pentagram right there on the living room floor. It was all the proof anyone needed. Bentley tucked that chalk deeper into his pocket and watched as James drew his final breath. While the crowd was busy murdering her husband, Corinne broke free and slipped into the house. She squeezed Mama Esther into a cupboard before they broke in. The other children were not so fortunate. My grandmother rocked silently for a while as I wiped tears away. Then, she said, the next day, the rains came, and the townsfolk rejoiced as if it was proof their murders had been justified.
Did Mr. Bentley go to jail?
I asked. Granny shook her head. He was smart, since nearly all had partaken or had relatives who had. The matter was never discussed, and our family name was no longer spoken. She held up a finger. And you can bet no one dared step foot on the devil's land. The farm went fallow.
What about Mama Esther?
I asked quietly. The day after the massacre, she crawled out and found her way across the creek to the Flanders. They hadn't partaken in the killings, but they knew what would happen if the town found out about a survivor. So they slipped her out of the county and took her to live with relatives down in Florida. I couldn't believe all that had happened here on our farm.
Are you sure Clyde's not a ghost after all that? Not that I believe in apparitions.
She smiled, then looked away. There are worse things than being a ghost. She stood and stretched her back.
I reckon it's time you met him. Go on inside and get a glass of water and a few slices of bread.
She was using her cane to navigate down the steps onto the worn path that led into the woods when I returned and took her hand.
I'm scared, Grandma. Can't we do this tomorrow? Scared? What happened to there's no such thing as ghosts and all that science talk?
I shrugged.
I'm scared for you.
Uh-huh.
You do as I say, and you'll be fine.
She shooed a baby rat snake off the path with her cane, and on we walked.
20 years passed, and Mama Esther had a husband and a new baby, my mother. Times were hard down in Florida, and they moved back here to make a go of the family farm. She fretted over the reception they'd get moving back here, being who she was. But nobody said a word, as if the slaughtering had never happened. Course, things never completely go away. Our family name had gone from a curse to a cruel nursery rhyme about Clyde. When my mother started school, children teased her, same way kids teased me.
I knew the rhyme. My stomach was in my throat, and I looked down at my shoes.
We used to hold hands in kindergarten and pull in a circle singing it. I thought it was just a game. I'm sorry. I never knew it was real.
She gave me a terrible look.
Sing it for me. No, Grandma, don't make me.
She double-tapped her cane.
Sing it. Then I don't ever want to hear it again.
So, with my head down low, I whispered, Clyde, Clyde, devil inside, takes your health and takes your pride. First, he kills your babies. Then he kills your crop.
throw him down a well, if you want it all to stop. Her jaw clenched, and we walked on in silence. Finally, she said, "When Mama Esther first laid eyes on this place as a grown woman, she found all kinds of work to be done after years of neglect. Fields had become woods, and the well was hidden in the growth. But she knew where to look. Once she made her way to it, she discovered the strangest thing." "What, Grandma?" I half-whispered. "A circle of bare ground surrounded the well. Not one weed or blade of grass in it." "Somebody was taking care of it?" I asked. She nodded. "That's a sensible thought. But without any paths through that brush, she knew the circle had come up on its own." We turned a final corner, and the woods gave way to a clearing. A worn wooden bench on top of rock pillars faced a circle of stone that stood 6 stones high. The well was adorned with 2 flower beds a few feet away on either side. A weathered wooden trellis stood guard over the bench. I ran over to see it. A dirt ring surrounded the well, with a width that stopped at the flower beds, which were also barren. Vines grew everywhere on the trellis, except where it hung over the edge of the dirt circle. Granny took a seat on the bench. "Mama Esther built those flower beds, this bench, and cover. But when she first got here, that circle measured 6 feet from the well. I stepped it off. It's smaller than that now. I'd say 3 feet wide." She nodded. "There's a reason. Mama Esther came here to visit Clyde every day, same as you would any grave. She'd tell him about her day, how she missed him and the rest of their family, that kind of thing. Then, one day, she asked Clyde if he wanted the other half of her sandwich. You know, just funnin'. She tossed it into the well, followed by a little of her lemonade. Next day, a single blade of grass had sprouted in that 6-foot circle. I shrugged. "Mr. Johnson would say that's more likely coincidence than not." "Maybe. But after that, Mama Esther brought him something to eat and drink every day. And soon, that circle shrank to 5 feet. Know what she did then? Took a soil sample?" "A what?" "Mr. Johnson says soil needs nutrients to grow. He says if nothing's growing in your garden, you should take a soil sample." "Well, I can tell you Mama Esther did no such thing. And I don't want to hear any more mud puddle Johnson proclamations. Soil sample my butt." "Well, what'd she do then?" "Threw in a chicken." My eyes widened. "A whole fried chicken?" "Nope. Live. Feathers and all." I folded my arms. "You're teasing me." She shook her head. "And the next day, that circle was only 3 feet. I huffed. "That's preposterous. Soon after, they went and visited relatives for a spell, and when they got back, the circle was back to 6 feet. And so, every day after that, she visited the well and tossed in food and drink. Once a month, she'd drop a chicken. The circle shrank back to 3 feet, and then she built these flower beds to mark it. When my mother came of age, Mama Esther taught her how to tend to it, and then my mother taught me. And in all that time, that circle has never gotten any larger. Now, I'm teaching you." My hands went to my hips. "I cannot believe you sacrifice a live chicken to that well every month. Why do you think our family became chicken farmers?" "But it's a live animal," I protested. "We could do puppies instead," That make you feel better?
I looked at my sweet grandmother in horror.
Why not rats or snakes?
She shrugged.
Good idea. Go fetch us a mess of snakes. Holler at me when you're done.
I balked at her.
I'm not throwing snakes, puppies, or anything else down there.
She gave me the look.
You will, because it's now your job. Or what? The circle of doom grows 3.5 feet?
I saw her eyes narrow.
This is your heritage, and one day you'll pass it on to your child.
I stamped my foot.
This is stupid. When I grow up, I'm going to college to be a science teacher like Mr. Johnson. I'm not sticking around this nasty-smelling farm for the rest of my life, raising chickens to chuck down a hole in the ground.
No sooner had I said it than I felt warmth on the right side of my face, followed by pain, a millisecond ahead of the crisp sound of her slap. I never even saw my grandmother's hand move.
Don't you back sass me, little girl. You have no idea what you're dealing with. What, you figure we're out here because of some ignorant farmer superstition?
I rubbed my cheek with wide eyes.
No, ma'am. You figure there's nothing down there in the bottom of that well except old bones and whatever slithers around in dark places living off the food we drop down?
No, ma'am, I said as I fought back tears.
Ain't no woman in this family ever go to college, and neither will you.
She grabbed me by the shoulders and looked into my eyes.
I love you, honey, and I am trying to protect you and this whole town. I need you to understand. They threw Clyde in there all those years ago. But what's down there now ain't Clyde.
I was trembling.
What's down there?
She let me go and sat down.
I don't know, and I don't want to know. But for generations, our family has kept it at bay.
She sighed.
When I first got the job, I didn't believe it either. Still, I tended to it every day until a new boy moved to town. With my attention elsewhere, I neglected to feed it most days, and I forgot about the chicken. I was at the soda counter in town with that boy when we heard a thunderstorm rumbling in. We looked outside, but it was a clear blue day. Closer I got to the farm, the louder those rumblings became. And that's when I knew. I ran as fast as I could, and when I got home, the ground and the whole house were shaking such that the windows were breaking. Mama was out on the front porch holding pieces of her favorite glass figurine that had fallen off the shelf. And you'd best believe that a split second later, my hiney was out to that well with a chicken under each arm.
What did you see? I asked.
It was like one of those earthquakes you hear about. But it wasn't the shaking or the trees falling that was the worst. It was the sound. A rumbling, gurgling, gravelly growl was coming out of that well. It scared me to my bones. I could feel its anger. It wanted out, and it wanted me dead. Honey, whatever's trapped down there is pure evil. Just remembering that sound makes me...
She shivered.
Enough about that. You ready to learn the rules?
I nodded.
Rule 1. You can look in the well, but don't lean too far or sit on the edge. And never, ever stick your hand down there. Rule 2. Always say kind things to it. I don't know if it helps, but you do it. Rule 3. Don't tell anyone. Not Sarah Flanders, not Mr. Johnson, no one until the day you pass it on to your child. If the townsfolk found out,
they'd find a way to screw up and let it loose. You understand?
I nodded again. I would have agreed with anything at that point.
It's a lot of responsibility for a young girl, but Pritchett women have always had to grow up fast and be strong. Now, look me in the eye and tell me you understand.
I understand, Grandma.
If you don't follow the rules, don't do your job, and that creature gets loose, people will die.
Yes, ma'am.
Good. I don't want to hear any more about this college nonsense. Now say something nice and toss in the bread and water.
Late that night, I stared up at the styrofoam solar system that hung over my bed. And I thought, what am I going to do? Grandma's gone senile. Where will I live when they take her away? I tossed and turned, and then I sprang upright in bed. Mr. Johnson says that no one can dispute the truth when there's irrefutable proof. If I could prove the monster wasn't real, then Grandma could be better, and I could go to college. I grabbed my notebook, and I listed out everything I'd need.
There's nothing scarier than trying to find a doctor. Take it from me. Being a final girl means that once the chase is over, I need fast, reliable, in-network medical care. And that's why I use ZocDoc. ZocDoc is a free app and website where you can search and compare high-quality, in-network doctors and click to instantly book an appointment. And the appointments happen fast, usually just 24 to 72 hours after booking. But you can even score same-day appointments, which is a literal lifesaver in my line of work. So what are you waiting for? Stop putting off those doctor's appointments and go to ZocDoc.com/13 to find and instantly book a top-rated doctor today.
That's ZocDoc.com/13. ZocDoc.com/THIRTEEN.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips, with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.
After chores the next morning, I took a rope, hay twine, a flashlight, and my grandmother's Polaroid camera out into the woods. I put everything on the bench by the well, and I fashioned a noose out of the twine. I fixed it around the camera, centering on its big red button. Then I tied the rope around the camera, and then around the flashlight near the rope's end. I stretched out over the well mouth with the rope. The flashlight dangled below the camera as the rope swayed, and I lowered it hand over hand. The slack line of the hay twine at my feet advanced over the stone wall. Go slow, I thought. If it hits the wall, it's gonna get stuck. Then I smiled. This is so scientific. I wish Mr. Johnson were here. I peered over the edge and watched the light descend bare stone walls where no moss or mold grew. 6 feet down, the flashlight illuminated the stone ledge. From there, the well continued in smaller diameter. I started to sweat. Don't drop it. I kept a check on the remaining length of hay twine as I let out more rope. As the flashlight and camera complex descended further, details of the illuminated walls became harder to make out. I lowered a little more, and the line went slack. Must be another shelf, I thought. I pulled the slack from the line to swing it toward the center, but it wouldn't budge. I tugged harder, but no luck. Then, something tugged back. The rope burned in my hands, and my heart felt like it would burst through my chest as I played tug-of-war with, I don't know. But then my fear turned to determined exhilaration. Whatever was on the other end of that rope was the scientific find of the century. And I, Clarissa Pritchett, would be famous. No doubt on the cover of dozens of magazines, maybe even the front of my school paper. I quit caring about rope burns, and I pulled harder. No way my grandmother could keep me out of college now. Then I remembered the camera. There'd be nothing without that photo. My irrefutable proof. My undeniable exculpatory evidence. Whatever exculpatory meant. I slid backward on the razor-sharp rope, grunting and fighting for enough line to tie it around a flower bed. When I had it secured, I yanked on the hay twine. A flash emanated skyward from the depths of the darkness, and the rope went slack. I was grinning ear to ear as I pulled on the rope to retrieve my prize. But no sooner had I grasped it than the rope jerked hard downward, pulling me over the edge. My arms flailed as I teetered on my stomach on top of the well. The only thing keeping me from tumbling in was the side of my shoe hung on the outer stone wall where the mortar was missing. With each hand, I caught an edge of the rim and held myself over the well, facing the depths below. Then I saw it. In a glimpse of the flashlight's beam, I saw something down there. I saw something down there move. Something dark. Something slithering. A rumbling, gurgling, gravelly growl echoed up the stone walls, crescendoing to a roar as the noise escaped the surface. And in that moment, I didn't give two hoots about magazine covers, college, or my picture in the school paper. I just wanted my grandma. And lickety split, I was off that well and sprinting for the house. I dove onto that front porch as if it were home base in a game of tag I desperately didn't want to play. As I lay there, out of breath and trembling, I had no idea my grandmother sat nearby or that she wasn't rocking. When my wits returned, I sat up, but I didn't make eye contact. She'd surely heard the roar and was giving me the look. In my head, I counted all the rules I'd broken on my first day on the job. It kind of made me want to tell someone about it. Why not break all three? Then, a thought entered my mind involving a rope tied to a flower bed. My mouth hung open as my head turned to the trail leading into the woods, and I thought about what might come around that corner. Grandma? I blindly tapped her left arm as I kept a vigilant watch on that trail. Grandma. Her arm fell limp onto my shoulder, and I shot up. Her head was hung. Her right hand was clutched over the left side of her chest, and drool dripped from her mouth. Flies landed and took flight from her hair, her mouth, and her open eyes. I screamed and I shook her. Then I shook her and I screamed. Finally, I shook her and I cried. Then my fear of losing her, of being an orphan, was overshadowed with something far worse. I'd chosen not to believe, to mess with the well. I'd killed my grandmother. The world began to spin, and my vision grew dim. Breathing was difficult, and I fell hard on the porch floor. After a few minutes of crying with my head in my hands, I stood, grabbed her fly swatter, and killed everything that flew. Then I hugged her neck, squeezing and wishing her alive as hard as I could. I knew it wasn't scientific, but I didn't care. Maybe I still believed in magic. Just a little.
I'm so sorry, Grandma. It's all my fault. All my fault.
I cried again as I hugged her. Then I felt a warmth in my back. Still hugging her, I opened my eyes to a sparkling orange glow that flowed from my shoulders, down my arms, and into her. The glow found its way to the left side of her chest. From there, streaks of sparkling orange pulsed up and down her body, like a glowing river, branching into streams, then small creeks, and finally into trickles. My grandmother, Alice Pritchett, opened her eyes.
Grandma!
I dove at her in a full body hug. She smiled. You found your gift. I fell hard to the porch floor for a second time, fighting to stay conscious as my head swooned. She stood and lifted me into the rocker. It'll pass, honey. You gave me some of your life, and you're feeling it. You'll learn to give a little at a time, not by the bucketful. She caressed my face. Now, listen to me closely. You have a ton more life in you than normal folks, but no matter how big the barrel, it only holds so much water. Once you give away the last of it, you'll go to the Lord. You understand? I managed a nod. And you can never tell anyone, lest you suffer Clyde's fate. Not even your husband. That made me blush. Now, here's the worst of it. Sometimes it happens just by bumping into folks, so you'll always have to be mindful.
Did you have it too, Grandma? Is that how you know? Did my mother have it?
She shook her head. I just know from the stories Mama Esther told me. You're the first since Clyde. She opened and closed her hands and swayed her hips.
You did a number on me, girl. My arthritis is gone. My skin is smoother.
She forced a couple of coughs.
No pee. I feel 20, maybe 30 years younger.
She shook a finger at me.
Don't you ever do that again. When it's my time, let it be. I have people I'm looking forward to visiting up there.
She looked into my eyes. But I do thank you. I feel like I could go dancing. She smacked her hands as if knocking off flour.
We've got work to do. All right, what happened with the creature?
My head dipped as I recounted the story.
I'm sorry for not believing you.
She smiled.
That's all right. I might have done the same back in the day if I'd had your hunger for college. Now dry your eyes and let's get to it. Fetch me two chickens while I go grab a kitchen knife.
We're gonna take care of this evil son of a bitch.
Thank you for joining us for this episode of 13. If you like what you heard, stop what you're doing and leave a 5-star rating and review wherever you listen to podcasts. This has been The Well, Part 1. Written by M.N. Wiggins. Narrated by me, Brooke Jeanette. Editing and sound design by Brooke Jeanette. Additional assistance from Ian Epperson and Bridget Freeman. Part 2 will be posted early for our patrons, as soon as it's finished. And otherwise, it will be up here on the main feed next Monday. Our producer-level patrons are Tattooed Fox, Rhiannon, Sean Geary, Anthony Diaz, Amy Harper, Jackie Kay, Chantel Payne, Nick, Jake R., Emily Toll, and Cozumine. Thank you so much for your support. Click the link in the show notes to learn more about joining us on Patreon. And check us out on social media. You can find us most places under Pod 13. And you can join the Facebook group for 13 Podcast. Just look for the logo and you'll find links in the show notes. If you'd like to submit a story to be performed on the show, or if you'd like to contact us about anything else, you can get in touch at info@13podcast.com. You'll find submission guidelines and other info on our website, 13podcast.com. And you can find that in the show notes too. Bridget Freeman is waiting for her chicken. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you soon.
Men, if you're ready to reclaim your edge, listen up. I used to be held back by constant bathroom trips with multiple wake-ups during my sleep and looking for restrooms whenever I was out. Then I discovered Better Man. After just 2 months, I started experiencing fewer trips to the bathroom, less urge to go, and I even slept through some nights. I feel a noticeable boost in my overall well-being, even sexual stamina. It gives me the freedom and confidence to live life on my terms. Better Man is clinically tested and trusted by thousands of men over 25 years. Ready to take back control? Go to BeBetterNow.com to order your supply today. That's BeBetterNow.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the FDA. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease. Use as directed. Individual results may vary.